Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue, give me a 1, 6, 0, what have you got? 7, okay, multiply that by 100, what's that? 700! Divided by 5, what's that now? 140! Why didn't you just multiply it by 20 in the first place? Add the number of legs on 2 standard human children, what have you got? 144! Okay, add the number of legs on 3 standard human children in pantomime spider outfits. What have you got now? 168! Shit, I've gone too far. Subtract the number of times Margaret Thatcher roosted on an ostrich egg to see if she could make it hatch into a human child. What have you got? 160! Why didn't you just add 2 kids in spider outfits? F*** you! Finally, multiply by the number of ostriches the Thatchers have put through school and university at their own expense. What have you got? Still 160. What happened to the other 7? Anyway, well, it's Bugle issue 160.
And big start.
Thanks,
big Jim. Start, Andy. Can you keep up that kind of pace, or have you gone out too quickly?
I think we all know the answer to that. That's all from me this week. John, can you pick up? So I'm here in London and in the centre of the news universe in Wapping, where outside the studio as we speak is just a pile of smouldering rubble and soldier fighting against soldier, man fighting against wife. It's like the Battle of Passchendaele, but more so out there, John. That's what it's like over here. How are you?
Well, fine, Andy. I mean, I'm not in the middle of
I haven't introduced
an epic news storm.
It's John Oliver. Anyway.
Oh, thanks, Andy. Yeah. Maybe you could even drop the energy in your voice even lower, okay, just to give me a hole to dig myself out of. Great MC work, Andy.
Thanks, mate.
Great
I'm a
MC.
Natural. I'm a natural. We're building up to Edinburgh.
Andy, I just got back to New York after, recording a little late this week because I went down to shoot a piece at the final space shuttle launch, and it was like nothing I've ever seen before, Andy. And I know that when people say that, it's often hyperbole, but in this case, it is definitely true because I have never seen anything like it in the truest sense. I have nothing to compare it to, no point of reference, because I've never personally witnessed an object say, okay, see you later, world, and then decide to fly into fucking space.
John, can I just pick you up on something there? Were you not at the last day of the 2005 Ashes series at the Oval? England v Australia, Brett Lee to Kevin Peterson. You saw a cricket ball do exactly what that shuttle did.
Well, the point is, Andy, there are cool things, and then there are cool things. There's Fonzie cool, and then there's Keith Richards cool. And let me tell you, that watching a space shuttle blast off the face of the planet is like watching Keith Richards play the guitar dressed as Fonzie. I've seen cool things before, Andy. I've seen Prince play live. I've seen you blast a football half an inch past Dave Gorman's face before screaming, where's that on the fucking graph? And now, to top them all, I've seen a space shuttle blast off the face of the planet. It was unbelievable, Andy. Every kid goes through an astronaut phase. I certainly did. The difference with my phase is that, as of Friday morning, it appears I'm definitely not out of it. I've been trying to think of exactly why I loved the launch so much. And apart from the fact that it's just objectively amazing, I also think it's because there's absolutely nothing natural about it. It is all man-made. It's man fighting nature and winning. It's humanity escaping the Earth no matter how hard it tries to pull us back down. The natural world doesn't want you to escape, and yet occasionally we do that and we deny their will with rocket power. The only way they could make it better is to somehow find a way of having the undercarriage of the rocket have a flipped bird on the base of it, just so humanity can tell gravity to go f*** itself all the way up. You can probably tell, there are really no words to express how magical it is. And that leads me to what might need to be an impromptu apology, Andy, to anyone who was watching the launch on Fox News, because apparently, completely, honestly, unbeknownst to me, I was standing in one of their shots next to the countdown clock, and just before the launch, you could clearly, very clearly, make me out in the shot mouth the words, holy f***ing shit. And, well, look, I'm sorry if anyone was offended by that, but I would argue that they shouldn't be, because if you were standing there, I believe that it is physically impossible you would not be saying exactly the same thing. I'm 98% certain that if the Pope ever witnessed a space shuttle launch, he would turn to whoever was standing next to him and say, "Holy f*** balls," before immediately sentencing himself to 15,000 Hail Marys. What I'm saying is, it was incredible, Andy.
Right. It does sound pretty good. It looked pretty good on the telly.
It was good. It was good. It was good. It was pretty good.
Yeah. Good. Oh, well done. on the other hand, went to my grandmother-in-law's 100th birthday party. So
That's great.
Opposite ends of the amazing physical action scale.
No, I don't know. They're both good.
One thing. Yeah, both defying nature. One by not moving very much, and the other by moving quite a lot. So, it's amazing to think, though, when my granny-in-law was born 100 years ago, there was no such thing as the bugle. That's...
Oh, wow. Wow. Amazing.
She got a telegram...
That really puts it in perspective.
Doesn't it? She got a telegram from the Queen.
She did?
Yeah. Which I hacked into. company policy. And I... it said, I've got it here. Dear Andy Zaltzman's granny-in-law... Congratulations on avoiding the Reaper for an entire century. He must be well knocked off. I'm nearly there myself, writes the Queen, another 15 or so to go. And with God repeatedly going out of his way to save me, he really is too influenced by song lyrics, wouldn't you say? I fancy my chances. In fact, I'm aiming to top 120, to be honest. Anyway, well done and keep up the good work. P.S. Is there any chance you could get me a signed copy of Andy's book? I can't be asked to go on Amazon to see if they're still bothering to sell it, so maybe you could use your family contacts to wangle me one.
That's a lot more personal than I thought they'd be. Yeah. I just thought it would be congratulations on this day, the big Q, and that would be it. Well, that's amazing. That makes me want to live to 100 to see what she'd write me what she'd draw me.
Yeah, well, I mean, the squiggly bit of the Q, she does like a smiley face.
That's nice. Yeah. That's a nice touch, because she really is the people's queen.
Yeah. So this is Bugle 160, the same number of bugles as... characters allowed in a standard text message. This one, out of interest, is the emoticon for a nagging wife. Also, the number of body doubles US President William McKinley used to have to try to avoid assassination. But he was a good-natured man, and he didn't want any of them to get hurt, so he kept them in a locked shed in his home state of Ohio. Inevitably, he was assassinated, and the 160 body double McKinley's starved to death. bit of a lose-lose situation. He should have told someone over there. 160 also, of course, Kim Jong-il's third highest break at snooker. Some people wrote it off as beginner's luck. It was in his first ever frame, but he then followed it up with a 165 and a 243 to clinch the 1998 Pyongyang Masters with a 3-0 victory over a man dressed in a Stephen Hendry outfit. And this is the bugle for the week beginning the 11th of July, 2011, meaning that on Thursday, John, it will be 222 years and 222 seconds since the storming of the Bastille, the flashpoint of the French Revolution, when 1,000 revolutionaries in blue and white hoop shirts cycled into the Bastille fortress in Paris with strings of garlic around their necks and baked a baguette so big that the French monarchy collapsed in a pall of gitane smoke, and everyone then went on holiday for a month.
Fact.
Absolute fact. And as always, a section of the Bugle is going straight in the bin. Well, actually, no, not this week. I think enough bits of News International have gone in the bin this week. Let's get
the cut of this. Delete your emails, Andy. Quick. Top story this week. One small step backwards for man. One giant leap backwards for mankind. Andy... On Friday, I don't know if I've mentioned this, at 11:29 in the morning, the 135th and final space shuttle mission took off from Cape Canaveral. There was only a 30% chance that it was going to take off due to cloud cover, but then half an hour before launch time, the clouds miraculously broke and they were given the all clear. It was almost as if God itself had looked down and said...
Herself,
there's no
John.
Way...
Herself.
I beg your pardon. no offence. There's no way this is raining out, I want to see something awesome, or my name is not G-Unit. But it was also an occasion tinged with sadness, because It feels like America isn't just giving up on its shuttle program. It's giving up on itself, Andy. It isn't often during empires that you can identify the exact moment when a nation waves goodbye to its hopes and dreams and literally watches them disappear in a long trail of smoke. And I think deep down, a million people watching the launch in Florida were worried that that was exactly what they were witnessing.
I'm slightly disappointed that you didn't manage to talk your way onto it, John.
Yeah, well, I left it all on the field, Andy.
Right, did you?
I tried to talk my way on, I tried to shove my way on, I tried to trick my way on.
But it's interesting, isn't it? 42 years ago, America put two men on the moon for the first time. Mm-hmm. Yep. Who said something, I forget who it was, said something along the lines of, "One small step for man," quiet Buzz, this is my line, "one giant step for..." Shut it, Buzz! I'm the guy with the line! Don't spoil my special day! "One giant step for mankind." Right, you can do your limerick now. But what he might as well have said was, "One small step for man, an American man that is, one giant f*** you for communism." And now...
It's true! It's true, Andy!
And now, four decades on, not delivering men to the moon, but delivering pizzas to the International Space Station. It's not like the Soviets have gone particularly far either. John, 54 years ago, they fired a dog into space. Yeah, mm-hmm. How far has communist dog exploration advanced since then? You know, nowhere. You would have thought by now there should be a fully functioning Leninist greyhound racing track on Jupiter, but there isn't. And I think we need answers from both sides of the Cold War on this one, John. Why is humanity going backwards?
Yeah.
And I guess cost is a consideration. Apparently in the heyday of the Apollo missions, it was 4.4% of the federal budget was spent on firing people into space.
Yeah, it's because it was amazing. Yeah, it was great. You know,
I think, yeah, I acknowledge that it's great, but at the same time, yeah, I do think all future manned rocket launches should be from specially built launch pads in refugee camps in Somalia. Just to make sure that we know the trade-off that's being made.
I'm happy with that, Andy. I agree. I don't disagree with that, but I would still want it to happen. The argument from the government is that low-orbit space travel can now be handled privately, which is true, but... the problem with that is that private companies will do what is profitable, not what is really cool. If there's no financial profit in, say, going to Mars, they're not going to spend any money going to Mars. But that doesn't mean it wouldn't be incredible for us to go there anyway. And if they do go, you'll be able to tell that it's being done commercially, because the astronaut will stick a flag in Mars that has a symbol of Domino's pizza on it and say, "One small step for man, one giant leap for delicious four-topping pizzas that will be with you in 30 minutes or your money back." Okay, did you get that? Because I need to do the same thing again now with Pepsi. "One small step for man, one delicious, refreshing drink with the choice of a new generation."
Well, we need to get to Mars, John. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, we absolutely must get to Mars, because otherwise how are we ever going to know whether mankind could survive on a planet whose atmosphere is made up almost entirely of carbon dioxide, with no liquid water, an average temperature of minus 55 degrees centigrade, which is dangerous, time-consuming and ruinously expensive to get to. I mean, how can we live like that?
We might thrive. Don't know.
I mean, the only hope we've got is that FIFA will give Mars the World Cup. And that is a definite... if they're giving it to Qatar, it's a definite possibility.
It'll be as easy to play there. The problem, clearly, with working for NASA is that it is a political football, and you have no idea how your football is going to be treated every 4 years. You don't know if a president is going to cradle you, or stab you with a kitchen knife, or promise the country that by the end of the decade they're going to put you on one of Saturn's moons. Not because it's easy, but because it's fucking amazing. As Kennedy's speech was actually written before he called an audible and chickened out of saying it. So, America, as you alluded to, must now rely on Russian rockets to launch its astronauts for the foreseeable future. And that is humiliating, Andy. Sure. They're trying to sell the future of space travel as being about international cooperation, but that's not how anything ever gets done. Cooperation never works. Competition does, Andy. That's the backbone of the capitalist system that this country claims to love. It always has to be a race in science. America only went to the moon that quickly because they didn't want Russia to do it first. Now they have to put their thumb out and hold up a little cardboard sign with space written on it in front of them whenever they see anyone who they think even looks like a cosmonaut. The only thing that I can see fully reviving this space program immediately is if China releases a statement saying they're going to put someone on Mars. If that happens, Obama won't even have time to hold a press conference because he'll be too busy in the Oval Office frantically signing blank checks with NASA's name on it until his wrist cramps up. Because America runs on the premise of American exceptionalism. And if America sees a Chinese astronaut standing on Mars, that becomes a very difficult case to make instantly.
The problem is when you're competing with China, is all they need to do is stand on each other's shoulders and they get there, basically, wouldn't they? I'm a bit rusty on the map.
I think that's close. Right. I think that's close.
Yeah.
The one on the bottom might have to jump.
If they're all on stilts, they would definitely get there and back. Well, I guess the problem was, you know, after all that fuss to get to the moon, it turned out it was absolute rubbish. You know, as a holiday destination, it was, I mean, it was appalling. It was like Canada, but more so, wasn't it?
News of the world news now, hack attack! Today, Andy, is the final edition of the News of the World, the notorious British Sunday tabloid paper, It Will Be Missed. By people who like to knowingly or otherwise have their faith in humanity drained out of them every Sunday. Otherwise, it will not be missed at all. If you managed to avoid this story over the past week, Buglers, then congratulations. But you might want to put some plastic clothing over your soul now before you hear about it, because you're about to wade into some depressingly murky waters. The 168-year-old... miraculously, mysteriously long-running tabloid is accused of hacking into phones of not just celebrities, which was clearly illegal, but nothing that seemed to get anyone's anger up that far. But then it emerged that they were also hacking the phones of politicians, murder victims, terror victims, dead British soldiers and their families. Police have identified 4,000 possible targets with missing murder victims' phones. They were even reportedly checking their messages and deleting some of them to allow space for more to be left, thus giving their family false hope that they were still alive. This is the moment, Buglers, where you really need to take your soul down to a car wash to have it industrially sprayed down.
I guess the question is, John, when you hear about all these stories and the hacking into the voicemails of bereaved families, what were they trying to find? What scoop was in their sights? Hey,
yeah,
boss.
Maybe it was a good one.
Hey, boss, I've managed to hack into the voicemails of the grieving family of a dead war hero. Nice work, Bernstein and Woodward. What have they been saying? Well, they're quite upset about it. Hold the front page! Jeff, you're going to have to redraw that cartoon. This changes everything. And can we replace the word delighted with devastated in the front page headline? It defies any kind of human comprehension, John. And it's huge upheaval in the British tabloid press. Now, upheaval in the British tabloid press usually just means a photograph of a particularly well-endowed model in a well-constructed bra. But not this week. Because, like I said, the biggest-selling newspaper title in the British newsosphere, the News of the World, the rogue, distant third cousin of this esteemed audio publication itself, has been taken round the back of the smoking shed here in Wapping and shot. The News of the World has, of course, through its history, been known for its crusading investigative journalism and fearless desire to expose corruption, breasts, wrongdoing, tits, hypocrisy, WAPs, drug-taking hooters, criminality, norks, perversion, melons, people who fail to keep it in their trousers, dugs, underpants and boobs. And they have had pretty major successes in all of those categories, I guess. But I think with the current slew of allegations, it is fair to say that the nation and probably the wider world has agreed that the News of the World had gone one step too far, and that one step was over the edge of a f***ing massive and already crumbling cliff. It did not just cross the line, John. It drove through the line in a high-speed tank, reversed back over the line, picked it up, taped the line back together, headbutted it, released the line into the woods, ran after it, kidnapped it, chained it to a radiator in its dungeon, fed it half a slice of stale bread and a glass of water every day, and whacked the line round the kneecaps with a baseball bat every morning before releasing it and saying, "Right, line, I never want to see you anywhere near one of my articles again, comprendo." So the Murdochs did act decisively and quickly. They didn't just pull the plug on the publication. They wrapped the chain that the plug was on around the News of the World's neck and kept pulling it until the twitching stopped, which was pretty rapidly. And thus, a slice of British journalistic history was brought to a splutteringly rapid end. And what had happened was the advertisers, who had previously thought that pointlessly and illegally hacking celebrities and politicians' phones was absolutely fine, became appalled by the latest allegations and were pulling out in droves like a Catholic orgy. And the first, it's been going, as you say, since 1843, and in fact they've printed the first edition in today's final edition. Back in 1843, mm-hmm. It features Etcherazzi drawings of pioneering computer hottie Ada Lovelace doing some maths. An unflattering watercolour showing how Queen Victoria was struggling to regain her figure after giving birth to her third child in April of that year. Allegations that Charles Dickens had written his current smash hit novel Martin Chuzzlewit using stolen quills. Another etching of poetess Elizabeth Barrett Browning showing off her new tattoo in a bikini on the beach. Plus suggestions that Foreign Secretary Lord Aberdeen might be having an affair with an unnamed Prussian princess. And tokens for a free dose of cholera. That's all there for 1843. It's going to leave a big hole in public life in Britain, John. I mean, I was looking at the website on Friday, still reeling from the knowledge that never again would I be able to go into a newsagent's shop on Sunday and not buy the news of the world. And I thought, who is going to step into the breach, John? Who will be brave enough to keep the world informed about who is sleeping with former pop star Kerry Katona? This, I mean, someone is going to have to step into the breach, John. Someone
it's tough.
Is going to have to be brave.
There is a chasm there.
So, I guess, you know, they seem understandably annoyed, the current staff of the News of the World, most of whom were not around at the time of these appalling acts that have been alleged were happening. But the problem is that the whole of journalism has been dragged through the mud, and the stories have emerged of phone hacking, alleged illegal payments to police officers and general grubberness. It's become clear that in the world of tabloid journalism, ethics were just a county that you had to drive through on the way to pat a celebrity in a rehab centre in Suffolk. Morals were just what you needed when trying to play Welsh Scrabble. Morals. Values were just the female sheep that used to be tended on the TV kid show Blue Peter by the famous presenter Valerie Singleton. Decency was how a travel agent might describe the Adriatic. Decency, not one of the all-time greats in my book, but does a job for you year in, year out. Integrity, that was just a handy description of film director Mike Lee. He's into gritty. And good behaviour is something that you would say whilst trying to butter up a champion apiarist in order to get them to tell you all the sordid gossip on who the Queen Bee had been shagging. Good beehive, yeah. Good beehive, yep. I'm done. I'm done on that lot. I'm done. I think that was that was satirically and artistically valid, John.
Will this change journalism for the better? Well, I'm not sure that will definitely happen. Here's an example of that. Ex-editor Rebecca Brooks, who was in charge during some of the alleged hacking at News of the World, gave a secret address to staff supporting them. Later that day, during a story on the evils of News of the World engaging in non-permitted recordings, a BBC news anchor said on TV, "We've obtained a secret recording that was made of Rebecca Brooks speaking to her staff in Wapping earlier today. I should warn you, it isn't great quality, it was done secretly, but let's listen to it." So, the BBC did a story about how phone tapping was illegal, and then got an illegally recorded speech taped on someone's phone and played it. I think the press has really decided to change its behaviour for good this time, Andy.
So, yeah, I mean, a tabloid journalism is going to have to try and haul itself back up into the gutter. I guess that's, you know, that's its initial starting point. Maybe politicians will realise they don't have to butter up the press like a Christmas crumpet in order to persuade the tiny minority of voters they need to persuade in this country that they are not irretrievably incompetent. And also, will the newspaper reading public finally sit up and think, hang on, maybe it doesn't matter if Gwyneth Paltrow has been photographed reading a book about lizards. Maybe I can live without that information. But another angle on this is that the Prime Minister David Cameron's former press secretary Andy Coulson was arrested and released on bail on Friday. And as discussed on the Bugle previously, the Prime Minister's decision to hire an ex-News of the World editor as his media man looked very much like the decision of a man who wanted his media man to be prepared to do absolutely f***ing anything. So Cameron and Coulson prance into number 10 on the back of not losing the election as badly as anyone else. And Coulson then had to resign under the pressure of the phone hacking story. And Cameron's judgment has been made to look dodgier than a famous American automobile brand now owned by Chrysler Group. And or dodgier than a former centre for the Leicester, England and British Lions rugby teams in the early 1980s. Delete as you see fit, or replace it with your own version of the same joke.
Andy, giving you an extra 48 hours to write jokes has really enabled you to leverage some forced references in there. It's true, though. You know, Cameron, there are real questions over his head. He said in a press conference regarding Coulson, he said, "I decided to give him a second chance, but the second chance didn't work. The decision to hire him was mine and mine alone. The buck stops here." And then he seemed satisfied with that response. But someone needs to point out to him, yes, but that doesn't mean the buck then disappears. You are now holding it. It stopped, but it doesn't go away. That means that you now have the buck in your personal possession. Its head is stuffed, and it's mounted to you, jutting out the front of your chest. Now, there is no advertising whatsoever in today's final memorial edition of the News of the World. Instead, they offered free adverts to various charities, many of whom turned them down. The Salvation Army and the RSPCA were among those to say no, but the Disasters Emergency Committee, which launched a drought appeal for East Africa on Friday, said that they would accept a free advert. A spokeswoman for the organisation said it in no way condoned the unconscionable behaviour of some News of the World journalists and executives, but that there was a humanitarian imperative for it to raise the maximum amount to help those affected by the drought. And that seems perfectly understandable, but they could do it both ways. They could accept the free ad, but write it a different way. Something like, please donate to the DEC to enable us to do important work. And please do not take this appeal as being in any way a condemnation of these industrial strength douchebags. Now, in full disclosure, as you referred to earlier, Andy, this podcast is presented by the Times of London, a sister paper of the News of the World, but more of an older, more mature, less slutty sister than its tearaway, shameful, dirty younger sibling who's repeatedly brought disgrace to the whole admittedly flawed family. I will say that I do not believe that they have been listening in to Andy and my conversations over the last few years at all. To be honest, they can't have been doing that, otherwise I don't see any way that they would still be allowing us to do this.
Actually, yeah. Usually, as we record, I do have Rupert Murdoch standing the other side of the glass in the recording studio here in Wapping, brandishing a monkey wrench, saying, "Go on, Zolsey, do more puns. I love puns." But and today, in fact, he has flown back to the UK, especially to clear up the mess. And he's also joining us, actually, in the soundproof safe for this week's Bugle. He's going to give us his views on the News of the World schmozzle inaudibly. Mr. Murdoch, thank you for joining us. Okay. Yep. Right. Okay. Point taken. Okay. Right. Are they supposed to be smoke signals, or are you just very angry? Okay. Right. More from him later. News International have announced that they will be replacing the News of the World, not with another Sunday newspaper, as has been widely speculated, but with old-fashioned town criers who will parade around the town centres and high streets of Britain on Sunday mornings, shouting out descriptions of celebrities in bikinis.
Feature section now, and good news! Andy, there was some fantastic news in New York a couple of weeks ago. Gay marriage has now been legalised when the Civil Unions Bill was passed in Albany. And it's not often that you get just an uncomplicated piece of joyful news, so it's worth celebrating these moments when we get them, especially after a story like the last one, when you need a bit of a palate cleanser. And for those who are against gay marriage, for whatever reason, you know, whether they have an idea of what traditional marriage should entail, or whether they think that by doing this we're opening up the gates of hell and are about to get mown down by a flaming horse ridden by the devil, Hitler and Stanley Matthews, they may have something to take the sting away in the form of a massive financial incentive, because New York apparently estimates that the new law will bring in close to $180 million over the next 3 years. So I'm here to announce, Andy, that I'm about to quit my job and do what I always wanted to do, form a wedding band that only plays techno music and Melissa Etheridge covers. Get ready, New York State. The Indiglo Boys are coming to a dance floor near you. Come to my window. I'll be home soon.
I think, did you suffer brain damage by standing too close to that launch?
I might have done. I might have done, Andy. I definitely feel different after it.
I've not been following this story too closely, but I'm just a bit worried, 'cause you live in New York, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting married quite imminently.
I am.
Does this mean you're going to be forced to marry a man? Or is one of you going to have to take the plunge and book a decent quality surgeon? I'm confused by the stories that I've been reading.
Well, people are confused in the press. You know, some of the reactions have been confused in the press about this, Andy. So these are all questions are all up in the air. I'm not sure. I thought I was sure until all this stuff started circling around. Now it's not clear.
Right.
The vote, anyway, went right up to the wire. And a key moment was when Republican Mark Grassanti of Buffalo, who had previously campaigned against gay marriage, voted for it, delivering a genuinely powerful speech saying, "I cannot legally come up with an argument against same-sex marriage. Who am I to say that someone should not have the same rights that I have with my wife, whom I love, or have the same 1,300 rights that we have? I vote in the affirmative, Mr. President." It was an incredible moment. Made even more dramatic when he then dropped to one knee and said, "And Governor Cuomo, would you do me the honour of making me the happiest man in the world and marrying me?" It took balls, Andy.
Yep.
It took real balls to make that vote against the official line of his party. Doing the right thing for no reason other than the reason of rightness has become so rare in politics that I wonder if we should now capture Mark Grassanti, put him in a zoo and try to breed him somehow.
What did he say about his wife? That he sees no reason why everyone shouldn't have the same rights.
Rights, yeah.
To his
as
wife.
He does.
All right.
He may have slightly messed up the wording there,
right,
and
okay.
I guess that vote is now legally binding, so I think Mrs. Grassanti has been in hiding ever since.
But it does seem a bit odd, John, after the royal wedding over here, which has clearly been a huge hit in America as well,
showed
quite how popular heterosexual marriage is. Why has New York now of all times gone to make homosexual marriage compulsory instead? I don't understand the thinking. They've been strongly motivated, there was, of course, strong politically motivated opposition to it. A lot of Republicans and conservatives in particular worried that if same-sex couples were allowed to marry, they'd effectively be encouraged to breed more, and the same-sex population could spiral out of control, meaning that same-sex people hold the democratic power strings at elections. So you can see why they're concerned about this. And also, think of the children, John. Think of the children of New York. Are they going to be forced to watch videos of same-sex couples marrying every day at school? Is that what George Washington dipped his balls into the Potomac for? Is it?
The Potomac, Andy.
Potomac.
I do prefer the way that you say
Potomac.
It.
Yep. Potomac.
He dipped his balls into the Potomac. George, get them out. This is the third time this week.
Yes, Potomac is a large tarpaulin that keeps river-dwelling mammals dry during the rainy season.
John, I've got a name for your business.
Oh, yeah?
Constant Raving.
Oh.
Nice.
Oh, that is phenomenal, Chris. It's either the name or it's a perfect little subheading slogan. The Indiglo Boys, Constant Raving.
Your emails now, and a couple of bugles ago, I did promise I'd read out an email full of puns about philosophy, but
You don't have to keep that promise.
Well, I don't know. I don't like to back down, particularly not now, you know, with the reputation of News International has already been dragged through the dirt this week, you know. I can't.
Well, you'd be digging even further.
Really? Well, I might hold it. We'll hold it for next week, because there have been a few puns in this show already. We'll hold it for next week. To be fair, the Ludwig Wittgenstein one is worth waiting for. It's an absolute treat. That was from Asaf Bittner, who sent it in from Boston. Sorry, Asaf. You're going to have to wait another week. The philosophy puns will have their day, albeit by this time next week. The bugle might just be me sitting in my living room talking to John on the phone.
we had a great email, though, from Amy Ewan, who said, under the subject heading, Attack of the Cockchafers. So, you know you're opening up that email. virus or no virus, come what will. It says, Dear John, Andy, and I'd say f*** you, Chris, but after that Hot Rod and Dragster thing, I'd rather invite you for a beer, Chris.
Yeah.
That's a very fair point. That was phenomenal work. She says, I'd like to share a story with you. I live in the city of Kassel, in the centre of Germany. And several weeks ago, in May, my friends and I gathered for a barbecue and drinks. Around sundown, we began to be bombarded by huge, ugly, bug-shaped attack helicopters. There were just a few at first, but soon they came in droves, diving at our faces kamikaze style, repeatedly ramming into our shoulders and heads, and forcing us to take cover under jackets and napkins. After swatting one to the deck, we were able to see a truly unfortunate-looking beetle-like thing, but still didn't know what they were. The following week, we researched the bugs and found them to be macaifers, or maybugs, or cockchafers. This was clearly a hilarious discovery, but apart from introducing our new insult compliment metaphor into our conversations, I thought nothing more. Imagine my surprise then when last week I caught up on some bugles only to hear you discuss the cockchafer. Since this is right up your collective alley, I wanted to share this with you. I did a bit more research and found a poem that was written by a German poet in the town of Fulda, which is a neighbour of Kassel. Here is the poem. It is Macaifer flieg, dein Vater ist ein Krieg. Deine Mutter ist in Pommerland. Pommerland ist Agberland. Macaifer flieg.
They're in the attic!
Sorry, Andy, I was forgetting what that might bring out in you. Amy says, I've heard your German impression, so I'll give you the English as well. This is the translation of that poem. Cockchafer fly. Your father is at war. Your mother is in Pomerania. Pomerania is burned to the ground. Cockchafer, fly. Oh, my God. Great poetry from the Germans, Andy. Yep. So uplifting. So uplifting. She says, all the best, you cock buglers, Amy. So thank you very much for that little window into the elegance of German insect poetry.
And this comes in from David in Stockholm, Sweden. And he writes on the subject, defining hashtag F you, Chris. Dear Andy and co. There you go. That's YouTube quitting your place. I was trying to find Chris on Twitter and thus Googled some keywords. The Bugle Chris Twitter. To my surprise, one of the first entries was a definition of hashtag F you, Chris. I presume the apparent viral potential of the hashtag has caused someone to write an entry on tagdef.com, some sort of Oxford Dictionary of Hashtags. Completely warranted. Here it is. Definition of hashtag F*** you, Chris. A short way of saying, I want my f***ing bugle, Chris. Get your f***ing thumb out of your f***ing ass and upload it to the RSS feed. Brackets, a traditional greeting to Chris. So there you go.
Very nice. It even says, it even defines Chris as the producer of the weekly bullshit parade that is the Bugle. I think that's a very elegant description, Andy, and it's also fact-based.
There you go. Thank you, David in Stockholm. So do keep your emails coming in to subject to change, the Bugle at timesonline.co.uk. Sport now, and victory for Britain, John. We have stuck it to Luxembourg in Davis Cup tennis. We have sent them home with their Luxembourger tails firmly between their stupid legs.
Send a tennis message.
Those jumped up little shits came to Scotland thinking they could beat the greatest nation in the world at tennis. Well, I've been sent back, John. Andy Murray had to play on the first day, a guy whose highest ever ranking in tennis was about 770, and who was a tennis coach. And to be honest, it was 6-love, 6-love, 6-love. The other guy won 15 points in the game. Murray looked like he kind of wanted to let him win a game, but it just didn't have it within his capability. And the guy, he didn't seem to get too upset by it either, this Luxembourger. But we've taught them a lesson, John, and I hope Luxembourg never darkens these shores again with tennis rackets.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we fought the war for. I mean, should Luxembourg even be allowed to play international sport? Was Hitler from Luxembourg? I can't remember.
I think it was close to there, yeah. So it's basically yes.
Anyway.
Go back to where you came from, Luxembourg! Luxembourg!
So that's it. That's it for this week's Bugle, and we'll finish with a Bugle forecast.
Okay.
Will there be a Bugle next week?
Don't think it's out of our control, Andy. It always has been. When you bite the hand that feeds you that hard, you can expect at the very least a verbal rebuke.
Yep.
Anyway, buglers, until next time, goodbye.
Farewell, buglers. Farewell.